Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX. Welcome to the first episode of Punk Rock Elite Podcast, a podcast about NoFX that is going to involve discussing NoFX that we've had for ages.
Well, we thought we'd give people what they want, and what they want is for us to not talk about any bands that aren't NoFX.
Or indeed anything or any concept that is not pure 100%. They are like Fat Mike with his cocaine, wants it totally uncut. Don't want any... this Coke tastes like there's some no use for a name in it. You know, they don't want... Don't want any of that. So, we're not burying the lead here. We've heard half album before you've heard half album.
We have. And we've heard the full totality of half album.
We have heard. It didn't take long, to be fair. It's not an undertaking. So,
well, it's half an album.
I mean, I think it's funny to have an EP called Half Album. I think that's... That's actually the funniest of all of the album jokes.
Oh, no, absolutely. Look, I didn't think single album or double album was funny. But when they came out with half album, I was like, okay, fair play, lads. It's, you know, like when someone says a joke that doesn't work, but then they repeat it three times. On the third time, you're like, ah, no, I think it has become funny now.
Yeah, it's... I think then it's become the meta. So you go, oh, we're playing with the meta now. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that... that detached irony that Gen X is so proud of. You just say something lame three times and then it becomes kind of lame but good. You know, it's that Simpsons joke, isn't it? Are you being sarcastic, man? I don't even know anymore. the Homerpalooza episode. So, yeah, so we're actually going to be talking about that. But how have you been, Reg?
I've been very well, thank you. All good. It was my birthday yesterday.
Was it? Happy birthday. I didn't realize.
Thank you so much. No, it was great. Like, we went to the Turkish baths in Sheffield. There's like some old Turkish baths that have recently reopened. So we went and had like a massage and then sat in a steam room that looked like one of those steam rooms what mob bosses decide who will die when and where next.
Oh, where they go to sort of meet with the leader of the triads.
Yeah, some proper Eastern Promises shit. Like, it was really cool.
Loads and loads of people with like portions of their fingers missing.
Yeah, too many tattoos for it to be recreational, you know? Yeah, like, you've been to prison.
All have been done in a Slovak prison. Yeah, it's like... yeah. Sort of lots of really, really wiry, sort of very, very thin line work, just depicting sort of kind of eagles.
Yeah, sure. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. I like it. And that was relaxing, was it?
Oh, yeah. No, it was incredible.
And then we went for some... close to hot rubbed crime.
I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? So, like, that's kind of what movies have made me think of when I think of, you know, like Mediterranean bath experiences, but actually you go in and it's just a lot of flip-flops and aromatherapy.
Right, yeah.
These are essential oils. Yeah, because I imagine that if I imagine to open one now,
yeah,
but try to make it feel like it's been there and the site of various crime agreements for for a century, it's probably a difficult aesthetic choice to justify. That has to happen naturally, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't add fake grime. It's very much like cutting your own jeans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is the hemmed, frayed edge of a new look jean. Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you had a nice time.
What about yourself? What have you been up to?
Ooh, what have I been up to? Not a huge amount. Couple of gigs. All that kind of thing. Moving house soon, so...
Oh, yes, fantastic, the big move.
Big move, yes. So, apparently... So, I don't know what... I don't know when that's going to happen, because what happens is you go, I want to buy that house, and then the people go, but we'd like you to buy this house. And then you go to the bank, will you help me buy this house? And they go, yes, we will do. And you go, see lawyers? That's all fine. They go, yes, fine. What's going to happen now? Oh, we're just not going to talk to you for weeks on end.
Yeah.
Right. But don't get complacent, because we might demand you move any minute now. Okay, fine. This isn't helping with the anxiety, but whatever. I think we're just in the... It is fine, but we just have to wait for a bit, which is very irritating. But, you know, worst things... Well, you know, it could have been so much worse. So yeah, that's fine. So I don't know if there'll be some sort of summer upheaval when I'm moving house. So we'll have to work out how we deal with the episodes. We might have to put some in the bank and pretend that we're still doing them weekly. I think we're sort of fairly close to being able to start promoting the old Punkin Drublic tribute album.
Yeah, absolutely. That's getting close.
It is. We've had a couple of extensions, a couple of last minute issues, but we knew that was going to happen because there's too many people involved for life not to get in the way somehow. So that's all good. But we're going to start drip feeding out some little trailers, little glimmers of content. We're going to be playing little clips of stuff and letting you know. We might even put one in. Should we put one in now?
Yeah,
go on. Which one do you reckon?
I don't know. They're all good.
They are all good. That's the problem. I'm just trying to work out,
because I've been most impressed by Zero Cost.
All right, we'll put a bit of that in. It's Red's favorite so far. So
they've done, you know, and they went in the studio a few times to get it right. Like, they kept saying, like, oh, it's just not quite right. And I appreciate that dedication.
Yep. We went in there, into the studio, went, oh, that's not quite right. Make it work, Ajit, and then walked off.
We'll make it work in post.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah, all right then. So the next thing you hear will be a little glimmer of Zero Cost. First person who is not in Zero Cost to tell us which song they're doing, I will let you know. You can send us your address and you will win a badge.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Don't want to chill, don't want to sit, don't want to hear no hippie shit. Don't tell me I'm closing my mind. So there you go. If that was by Zero Cost, if you know what it is, pop your answers, punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. And let us know. I won't be accepting Instagram. It all has to come through the email. So if you're the first person to email in with the correct answer and your address, I will send you a Punk Rock Elite badge. A pin, if you're from North America. I call them pins over there.
Your data will not be sold to any third-party organizations.
No, but the postman will be able to see your address. So if you're not comfortable with that, so there we go. I think this is how we're going to do it now. We're going to have competition each week. We're going to just drip feed you just a little bit. We're going to tell you the band. We're going to put a little snippet up, and then you can potentially win a Punk Rock Elite badge. We'd better let the Midlife Punk Podcast lads know that we're doing this. Feels like something they should know. But given it's something we just thought of while we were recording, I think that's pretty good. Well, We should also say we got advanced sort of versions of the half album.
Uh-huh.
So thank you to the people who made that possible. So we've listened to it. We've heard it. Apparently, I think we're recording this on Thursday. I think on Thursday evening in the US, there was like a listening party.
Yes, I've seen this advertised, yeah.
In a record shop or maybe in a club or something like that. It may be out by the time that this airs, but we heard it beforehand, so we were able to sort of get there with the zeitgeist. We might not be there, you know, with Brooklyn Vegan or Associated Press or anything like that, but in our own little way, we've done this in a bit advance. So we're going to jump over from the break from this little intro, little music break, and then we will talk about Half Album. Half Album. Now, yes. This is interesting, isn't it? Is this the very first sort of NoFX release, apart from the single version of I'm a Rat, that we've both basically known about for the same length of time and had access to for the same length of time?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Even like I'd heard single and double before you had.
Yes, you had. Yeah, yeah.
So this is that. Okay, so we've got five songs. I'm just going from the single album wiki, because they were all sort of recorded at the same time, I believe. Oh, look at that. That's cute. Double album has now got its own wiki page. It didn't when last time we looked.
Great.
So, yeah, so basically it's released very, very soon. The personnel listed: Fat Mike, lead vocals, bass; Melvin, guitar background vocals; Hefe, guitar background vocals; Smelly, drums. Additional personnel: Jason Livermore, producing, mastering, mixing, engineering; Bill Stevenson, production and engineering.
Okay.
So take those with a pinch of salt, because there could be some slight variance, because it isn't quite the same release, but it is the last in the album trilogy, as I'm calling it.
Yeah.
So the front cover, very, very similar, but there's just half an album on the turntable.
Which is more fun, isn't it? I mean, we've discussed it previously, how
yes.
We feel of the album era albums, this is the title that's actually a little bit funny, you know, having come off the back of single and double. And its album artwork also, like, that works, doesn't it? Because it's half a record, which obviously you couldn't play through a record player. It's yeah. a humorous image, where previously I've found single and double album covers to be a little bit lacking.
Kind of drab. I mean, the double one having the albums on top of one another, I can see.
I hadn't actually noticed that.
Yeah, single album's got one, and then double album's got the other album on top of it, like a burger or similar.
Mm.
But again, it's, I mean, NoFX are known for having very witty album covers, like Heavy Petting Zoo. So,
but then they also do have terrible album covers, like Self Entitled.
Yes, just adding on to. Sorry, I was taking a slurp of tea there while Red was making a point I thought was going to be longer, but which isn't your fault. That's entirely on me for not preparing my tea drinking appropriately. But yes, going back to our lovely time that we had with the hot takes. So someone, you know, talking about how Wolves was bad, which I don't agree with.
Yeah,
but the album cover is bad. I think Self-Entitled is actually worse, because that seems sort of almost lazier, because it is just like, should we just put the logo with some like photos of an audience?
Yeah, I will say, like, I really don't get the Self-Entitled album cover at all. I just think it's really bad, and it doesn't look like a NoFX. Even though it says NoFX across it,
it's got NoFX in some of the biggest letters on there. I think it's up there with like Punk and Drublick for how big the NoFX is. But you're right, yeah. It looks like. Do you know what it looks? It looks like, we'll get to Half Album, I promise, but it does look like, and we might have even mentioned this in the episode, I've not re-listened to it, but it looks like a sort of a dodgy bootleg of a NoFX live show.
Yeah.
Self-Entitled. It looks like, pardon me, like they were live in Zurich and someone just like bootlegged the whole thing and put it onto a CD.
Yeah.
That's my feelings on it anyway. But yeah, so half album. What's your overall impression of half album?
I think it's half good.
Oh, wow. So Red enjoys quarter album. It's really nickel and diming ourselves here.
I think more than half of it is good, to be fair. And yeah. I prefer it. I've preferred my experience with this than I did with single and double album.
I agree with that one. I enjoy this more, but I think it's...
But there is less of it, so is that fair?
I don't know. I think there's not like a single song on it that I'd point at and go, ruinous.
Sure.
You know what I mean? None of it. It's like...
But there are tracks on single and double which, you know, we wouldn't feel... Like, I'm glad that they've recorded these tracks, but single and double, I don't feel like I need to have heard a lot of that.
It feels like they could have taken a few of these and replaced some of the single and double tracks with these and actually made for a better single and double experience.
Well, I think here's the return of my hot take with the whole, I'm going to call it the album era of NoFX. But, like, I think on each album, on single, double, and half album, there's some great, great tracks. Mm-hmm. I just wish that it was refined more. I think between single, double, and half album, I think that there is a decent album in that.
Yeah.
And I wish they hadn't eked out into three separate releases.
Yeah, I think... just before we started, I was rewatching. There's a video called it's from the is it Alternative Press or whatever. It's not Fat Mike talking about the most important Fat Records releases.
Okay,
I think it's like 30 albums he talks about. It's about half an hour long, maybe 40 minutes, and he talks about 30 albums that he thinks are the most important that have been released. And during that, he goes off on a little side tangent and he mentions that after Heavy Petting Zoo, they spent loads of time on all the songs and it was really overthought, which is why it produced Heavy Petting Zoo. And that's why for so long, he said 20 minutes per song, that's it. I'm going to write a song in 20 minutes and then it's done. And he probably spent, maybe he spent half an hour on some, but you know, he was sort of sticking to, I'm just going to write it and then it's done, because overthinking it will turn it into something I don't want it to be. And he said, and Pete, you know, that's where he said, that's probably our best album. And it's certainly one that a lot of people really, really love. Yeah. And it feels like a return to form after Heavy Petting Zoo, which doesn't feel very NoFX-y to me. But again, that's for another time. Point being is that he said that these new albums, these have been insanely overthought.
Yeah.
These have been hanging around for ages. And he spent a lot of time. I saw an interview he did. It was about 20 minutes from the last week or so with from somewhere in Europe, maybe Germany. It was done in English, so I couldn't be 100% sure, but he was talking, it was about 20 minutes long, and he was talking about how Mike tends to now listen to best ofs from the 60s and 70s because he's mainly interested in songs these days. Oh, and Frank Turner, he pointed out.
Okay.
Pointed out that he's interested in, because he's more interested in songwriting. And that's when he's sort of become obsessed lately with the idea of the number of chord changes before repeating a chord that he can put into a song and why that makes it a good song. I mean, I think the guy's just supremely bored with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, sure. And I know I've said this before about, again, NoFX's album era, but where I get frustrated is there is a new NoFX sound in these albums. And if you cherry picked a few songs from single, double, and half album, you would find NoFX's new sound, because there is like a really interesting, much darker NoFX, which oddly uses slightly cleaner guitars, which I think is really interesting.
I think that there's some of these songs, things like Doors and Fours.
Yeah, Doors and Fours.
Stuff
man.
Like that. They feel like the verses of Leaving Jesus Land.
Yes, yeah.
That, or the song on So Long. Degeneration.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can see it from the hole in his head. That mm-hmm. You know, that he's a classified grade A psychotic, which I always thought was psycho dick when I was a kid. But
I thought it was psycho bitch. So,
oh well, there you go. No, psychotic. He's just playing with the rhythm to get the scan right. But yeah, that sort of muted, palm muted, slow sort of doomier thing. And I think that might come from stuff like Rudimentary Peni and mm-hmm. those kind of sort of sludgier, doomier, sort of crusty kind of sound things. You know, I'm talking very generally there. But yeah, I think that that would be an interesting approach. But they're still putting in the fat sound, kick drums and stuff like that. I don't know. Let's launch into it. Speaking of all of that, we talk about the very first song on it, the Fake a Wish Foundation, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like that at all, because this is NoFX prancing around going, look at me, I'm the Beatles.
I think the opening track is the one that I like get the least on this album. Like, I don't hate it, but I don't...
No, I mean, there's nothing really to... Well, basically, it's part two of the My Bro Can Survive Cancer.
Oh, song. I hadn't even noticed that.
It's... the My Bro Can Survive Cancer is about the guy... It's on single or double. It's on one of them. They're all so closely interlinked. It's basically one release separated out over there, right? So,
and it should have been.
Well, yeah, maybe it should. Just get it all out at once. Move on. So this guy got in touch with Fat Mike somehow and said, oh, I've got brain cancer. I've only got so many, you know, months to live. I'm a big fan of your band. Can I meet you? And he's like, yeah, sure. Do you want to do some cocaine? So they do some coke. They go to some gigs and stuff. He writes a couple of songs. My Bro Can Survive Cancer is that one. Shortly after that record was released, Mike finds out that this guy does this all the time.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. He's told like 30 bands. He's got someone else's brain scan with the tumor. Guy's fine. And so Mike writes Fake a Wish Foundation, where he's sort of like, kind of like applauds him. He's like, yeah, well done. You got me. And that's why he says, you know, it's the best song I've ever written about cancer yet, which suggests he's got a few more he's planning on writing, but... never rule it out. But it's sort of, it's piano-y. It's got this sort of, the drums and stuff and the chord sequence is super Beatles-y.
Yeah.
I suspect it wasn't Smelly who played the drums on this.
Oh, okay.
Well, because he didn't play them on The Biggest Drag.
Oh, didn't he?
No, because Baz, the Frenchman of the Orchestral Decline fame, someone asked him on Instagram, was that you playing drums on that? He goes, yeah, I played on that. That was the only one I played on. They used some of my ideas for other ones, but Smelly played them.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yes, and it's part, and also on the harmonies, you can hear Johnny from Old Man Markley definitely providing the R's.
Yeah,
and the layered harmonies and stuff. So this almost feels, this is sort of unfinished Cokey.
I was going to say...
go on.
That this EP, the one NoFX release that reminds me the most of this EP is the Cokey the Clown album. You're Welcome?
You're Welcome by Cokey the Clown.
This EP reminds me of that more than anything else that NoFX have released.
Well, we do have a song from that album on here. So
yeah, we do.
That doesn't
do.
Help. But I think Fake a Wish, The Queen is Dead, obviously originated or was originally on Cokey, and The Last Drag. Those three feel most Cokey, if not musically, then in tone.
Yeah.
And obviously one of them is.
Because also, I mean, like, NoFX... Because I know on Koki there's a lot of songs that aren't necessarily heavy. You know, like there's a lot of like piano driven songs and a lot of acoustic songs. But outside of that album and potentially West Coast versus Wessex, NoFX don't really do like acoustic songs. So it's really interesting that this EP opens with like a largely piano number, which I've only normally if I hear Mike singing on a piano number, it's a Koki the Clown thing or, you know, yeah, Frank might get strung out.
There's a couple of bits of on First Ditch Effort. Like, I'm so sorry, Tony, but then that goes full band.
Exactly, it goes anyway, full band later.
There's little bits of keyboard here and there. But as far as sort of actually being piano driven, no, not particularly. But yeah, this feels really Beatlesy. It's got a real, a real across the universe-y kind of affectation to it. Obviously it's faster than that, and it's, you know, the melody is still very NoFX-y, but it feels like an intro to a song that we didn't get, because it's only like it's less than a minute and a half. It feels like that it's going to lead into a bigger song that explores this theme further.
It feels like the first minute and a half of a 6 minute, you know, like Hey Jude, but in a NoFX style.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, when everything sort of kicks in, and then it goes heavy and fast. Then Hefe plays a solo over the top, and then it goes into the song,
and it's got
proper.
Some accordion in it.
Maybe at the towards the end, it'll have the accordion play out on it. And as far as opening tracks go.
Yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it?
It's the weirdest one since 60%, because 60% starts off dead slow. It obviously turns into what it
sets out the stall really well, though, doesn't it? 60%.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that's also another reason why people took Against Wolves, because it doesn't start with Linoleum or Punk Rock Elite or Sold Out or even Hobophobic, which sounds like a NoFX song to start that album, but you know, it's you know, Church and Skate, you know, come on, it starts with doom 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 doom. It's like, okay, what's this? But you know, that could be part of it. We've spoken about I'm a Rat. Sorry, did you have any more to say about Fake a Wish?
I think it, you know, I'm largely repeating what you've been saying. Like, it's a great, I feel like it's a good idea, but I don't think it doesn't feel particularly finished. But I think it's like a great idea. I'd even go as far as saying, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a good story. I think it's a great name. I think it's well written. I just think it's a minute and a half of like a 4.5 minute song that, you know, we're missing 3 minutes off.
Yeah, maybe it's fine. I don't dislike it, but I sort of,
how cool would it be though, you know, like how I feel that if we condense down all of the songs from their album era into one single release, if around, you know, like after the halfway point, after you've had like, you know, Derby Crashing Your Party, Doors on Fours, The Biggest Drag, if then like around like track 6 or 7 it dropped into Fake a Wish Foundation, I think that'd be a really interesting moment in a NoFX record.
If that started side B.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think that would be cool. And I think that would be interesting and different and I don't know.
Yeah, I've just remembered what you said about they don't really do acoustic stuff. All I can really think of is on EPs or singles, there's like acoustic version of My Orphan Year, there's You're Wrong. Obviously.
Yeah, You're Wrong, yeah.
And there was a sort of a more acoustic-y version of The Man I Killed from Wolves, but that was sort of like a pseudo-country song.
Yes.
Anyway. But yeah, so that's just cleared that up for me. We're jumping all over the place, but it's sort of, it's a strange one, this one. It's not really like a sort of get your teeth into it kind of release. It's just sort of, Apparently, this is the end of the album thing. After
yes,
this,
I would imagine
there's
so.
A whole load of there's a new record ready to go, which is called something like "Everyone's Insane But Me" or "Everyone's an Idiot But Me" or something.
Oh, okay.
Everyone else is insane. And I don't know how many songs are on that or anything. I'm sure we'll find out. I think that's coming out maybe even next year, but certainly not before they finished the tour, which I think ends in like October or something, doesn't it?
So mm-hmm.
If you are going to that tour, if you're going to be in Brixton on the 12th of June, let us know. We're going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. It's, punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Track number two, I'm a Rat. We've already spoken about this one.
Yeah, it's good.
Yep. And it's also got piano in it as well. Right mm-hmm. at the end, it fades out on the little piano bit. I like this song just fine. This album has got a sort of a weird feeling of ha-ha got away with it. Because even the Faker Wish Foundation is about a guy who just got away with knocking about with Fat Mike for a bit, getting a song written about him, cadging some free coke and then fucking off.
Yeah.
And like Mike's like, hey, well, it worked, you know, chanced his arm. Shy lads getting out, you know, it's all that kind of thing. I'm a Rat is about how clever Mike is at making people think that he's doing one thing when he's doing another. Again, it might not be about him, but it feels like this one is.
Yeah, it does feel like he is. It is, yeah.
Because it's sort of, but we've spoken about that one on a previous thing. I can't remember which one, but you'll just have to look for it. We've spoken about this song as well, The Queen Is Dead.
Yeah, well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, this is, they have released this previously on the Cokie the Clown album, You're Welcome.
Yeah.
Do you prefer this version?
I don't dislike either of them, really. They're fine.
Yeah.
I think the chorus works better here because I think the chord changes behind it make it a bit more interesting because it's a repetitive hook.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the same notes over and over again. It's like You're Beautiful by James Blunt.
Sure.
Where it's the same notes round and round, but the chords in the background give it a different context. It might be slightly more complex than You're Beautiful by James Blunt. I'm just using an example that everyone has heard to death to understand that musical concept that I'm explaining very poorly. Yeah, it starts like the Cokie version. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the little finger picked thing. And then it kicks into like the Fat sound, which I suppose is more appropriate because it sounds like Naya was, you know, was the queen of hardcore or whatever they called her. You know, she was always at the shows. She was a very present person in the punk scene. And so having a punk song to celebrate her makes a bit more sense.
I'd forgotten that this song appeared on You're Welcome.
Right.
So when I saw the track listing, I was like, oh, great. We're going to have a funny NoFX song about the death of Queen Elizabeth II.
Right, you thought this, right.
You know, like, you know Blasphemy on Coaster? Yep. I thought that's what we were going to get. You know, like Majesty, Majestew, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, like the sort of thing he'd thought the Sex Pistols would do, but obviously they're not a band anymore. So
yeah.
That's exactly what
I was expecting.
That would have been, I'd have enjoyed that.
Yeah, it sounds fun, right?
I think we mentioned that he still listens to Frank Turner a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we know that he does, you know, he mentioned that recently. Frank Turner's got a song called Long Live the Queen. Long Live the Queen, about a friend of his who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And he met her when he was in Million Dead, and she was a fan of that, and that's how they became friends. And she passed away very young, and it's a song about finding out she was ill, getting in touch with her and saying, hey, let's break you out of the hospital and go fucking crazy and have a mad night out if this is going to be it. And then he gets a cut, and you know, this sort of little fantasy that they had of going out and tearing up the town. And then he gets a call saying that she's passed.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's a really great song. I'm sure your fiance is familiar with it. But yeah, it's really, really good. And he said when he performs it live now, because it's off one of his very acoustic things, like barely any band on the album. It's all very much him and a guitar, a few overdubs, maybe, you know, stuff like that. Very, very stripped back. And he said that she told him often that she didn't like his acoustic stuff. She liked his heavy stuff, back, you know, from when he was a lot younger. So now when they perform live, they do a hardcore version of it with like full band.
Nice.
And it's really, really good. He goes, this is the version she would have actually liked. And it's really, really good. And it's great. I didn't realize that he did that. And I saw him do it at Leeds one year. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is really excellent. Yes, absolutely. Well done. it was just fantastic. And I don't know if Mike has taken some inspiration from that, because
it wouldn't be the first time that I have clearly heard Frank Turner's influence in NoFX's music.
Yes, but I mean, not even like musically, just like the approach of reworking it in a version that would be more sort of appropriate, or one that's what this person would have preferred, that kind of thing. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I think I might prefer this version.
Yeah,
but not by much. It's only sonically in a preference to me. And I think maybe some of those chords got changed and it's made the chorus a little more interesting tonally. The thing I find most is that if you're releasing an EP with five songs, why are you releasing one of them as a single? Like with I'm a Rat. It's like, who releases a single off of an EP? And I suppose that's part of Mike's, people don't do that, so I'm gonna. Wait! Fine, whatever. I mean, you can if you want. And then also, one of those songs is also a sort of a previously released or a cover. It's the same as on Double Album, where out of 10 songs, which is such a small number for a NoFX album, out of 10 songs, one of them is from Home Street Home.
Well, it feels weird here that basically, you know, I'm a Rat has been already released by High Standard. It's not the first time the track's been released. The Queen is Dead has been released on You're Welcome.
Yes.
Fake a Wish Foundation is a continuation of a story from another album.
Yes.
The Last Drag is, you know, a reworking of The Biggest Drag.
Well, sort of. We'll get to that.
Yes, we will.
That's the song with the most to talk about. It's also 6 minutes long, so there's a lot. That's doing a lot of the heavy lifting here on this thing.
But in terms of it being like its own release, I do think it's got a few things working against it. A lot of these songs have already been released, or they are continuations of stories that started in previous releases. So I think it's quite difficult to see this as its own standalone piece.
Yes, it feels like an epilogue.
Yeah, that's
more
fair.
More than it does a release, I suppose. And it's not that people can't do that. And sometimes people do that. I can't think of any examples right now. All I can think of is actually Stuart Lee released a book of three of his stand-up shows, like transcribed and annotated and explaining which bit, you know, it's really, really interesting. If you're into stand-up, that he's just sort of basically the DVD releases of those shows, written them all out longhand, and then put little footnotes saying this refers to this, or I used to improvise this bit every night and I chose these bits and stuff like that. It's all very interesting from a nuts and boltsy kind of look. And then he released, because shortly after that book, a new solo show of his came out.
Yes.
And so he released a very small version. He released an EP.
I think I've got that.
I've got both of them, yeah. And I think the first one was called How I Escaped My Certain Fate.
Yes.
Which has also got forward and afterward and stuff. It's all really, really good. But then he released the If You Prefer a Milder Comedian, Please Ask for One EP, which he based on the specials thing. I think he wanted to like sellotape a picture of someone into the crowd. He'd like took a photo of an audience, like the specials, a specials EP and stuff. And so so that kind of thing, I think, is really, really fun and cool to do, is to go, oh, we've added an addendum. Because it's kind of cooler than releasing like, oh, now here's the bonus digital edition where We've got all of the songs but acoustic this time. Wouldn't that be mad? No, it wouldn't, Rancid. Stop. Come on, behave. It's what are we doing? Let Tim do another solo album. It was really good. So yeah, so there's that one, and I suppose that's what this half album is. It's sort of finishing. I suppose it's sort of just drawing a line under it, and I think for drawing a line under it, the actual purpose of it, I think it does work.
I think that if single, double, and half album were released as a little box set, which they potentially may be at some point.
Oh, the vinyl box set will be in production as we speak, I'm sure.
I think that might be an interesting addition to your collection. I think what we don't like is, you know, like, I think each separate release on its own doesn't have much to say, but I think all of them together paint an interesting picture of, you know, the next stage of life of NOFX, and I think there's definite value in these projects. I just kind of see them as one whole thing and not three separate records.
I think the best 12 songs off of those three releases, which is 25 songs.
I think it should be 12, like 8 songs. I think they should do their shortest album and be
To be honest, well, you'd be including the big drag, which is like 6 minutes anyway.
Yes.
So you're already bumping it up there a little bit. Well, let's put it this way. My favorite release of the last couple of years is Let's Go Goodbye Blue Monday by Goodbye Blue Monday.
Okay.
Which is the name of the album. The artist is Goodbye Blue Monday, which means if you buy it on Bandcamp, the album tracks, the titles are too long to unzip. You have to sort of go in and pull them out. Now, anyway, it's an incredible piece of work. It is 9 tracks long.
Mm-hmm.
2 of those tracks, one of them is an intro, which seems to be taking the piss out of Dropkick Murphys, because it's got poorly played bagpipes with "Let's go, goodbye Blue Monday" chanted over the top of it, right? For no real reason. It adds nothing, and that's about 20 seconds. And then there's a weird, dirgy noise bit in the middle of it that's called "We hope you're enjoying the song, warning, this next one is a bit much," or something like that. Because it's a concept album about the singer's mental health problems, which culminates with, it doesn't quite culminate, but basically it's a symphony album, which I really, really like. It's all one piece of music, really, but there's a song called Harry Carry about a suicide attempt. So keep that in mind if you're thinking about listening to it, which I would recommend because it's amazing. That's 14 minutes long.
Wow.
And it's brilliant. It's fucking incredible. And then there's a little minute and a half song after that as well. But so basically there's 7 songs on this album, and it's incredible. And I don't mind having an album with fuck all songs on it. If it's good stuff. If it's all good stuff, and it is brilliant. Goodbye Blue Monday are fucking phenomenal. So I recommend them hugely. So if you were thinking of taking 25 songs and whittling it down to 8, in fact, we should do that.
What, right now?
I don't know about right now.
Oh.
I think right now would be, I mean, I'm not against doing it right now, but we can always just cut it out, to be honest. Yeah. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a few minutes right now to jot down what we think our...
Oh, yeah. This is well doable.
Yeah, yeah. What our 8... Well, I'm gonna go for 10, actually, to be honest. I'm gonna go 12. We're gonna cut it in half.
Okay.
Because there's, I mean, you can say which ones you'd leave off in the case of your top 8, but I think there's 25 songs over the 3 releases, so I think 12 is a good cut in half. And if you can note down the track length as well, and we'll just give a rough time as to what that would be.
Hello everyone, Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite, or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show.
So, the humblest man in the room, track number 4. What did you reckon?
I think this is the best track on the album. It's the humblest man in the world, isn't it?
Is it? Humblest man in the world. Sorry. Humblest man in the world. You're absolutely correct. I apologize.
I think it's the best track on the album. It makes it into my best of the album era.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great song. Is it about Melvin? I assume it's about one of the members of NoFX.
It talks about them, yes. And I don't know which one it is because it says they want to live by improv. And I know that Hefe does improv.
Right. Yeah. And that actually, that bit sounded like Mike's general approach to the world.
Yes. Maybe it was designed that you could talk about, all of them in the same way. And have everyone think that, you know, I don't know. I like it. Do you know what? This reminds me, this feels like it could have come off of Wolves.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
It's got a similar, the riff is like a cross between USA Holes and High on the Down Low.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I completely agree.
And the guitar tone is not a million miles away. Yeah. I think it feels, and I think the harmonies on there and stuff like that, this gives me massive Wolves vibes, which is maybe why I'm so warm to it.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something.
I think it's I think it's really, really good.
I mean, if you are going to listen to this album, I do think this is the track to listen to off of it. I think this is the one to add into your playlist or whatever.
It would be the one that would be a playlist addition for me.
Yes.
From this album. Everything else, probably not.
You know, everything else has its place. We'll get onto the last track, which I really enjoy. But
I don't
actually dislike
any of the songs on this EP. Mm. Yeah. I don't think any of them are bad, whereas there are some I cannot for the life of me stomach punk rock cliche.
Yeah, I think there are bad songs on double and single album, but I don't think there are bad songs on half album.
No, and you know there are only half the number of opportunities to provide any bad songs. But it's an interesting one. It's a really interesting one. It's an interesting one. I don't quite know what to make of it all fully. But if that coffee table book ever comes out, telling us about what the lyrics mean of different NoFX songs, it'll be interesting to see how many later era NoFX songs get included in that. Because
yeah.
I sort of get the feeling that Mike desperately wants to be understood now more than ever.
Hmm.
And which is why perhaps some of his songs have become less oblique.
Okay, yeah.
Or opaque. Both. you know, because sometimes he'll write a song and people will go, oh, wow. And it's like, oh, no, that's not about me. That's about someone I know. Or that's about a thing I read or something like that, you know, which is all fine. But yeah, I think it's we got Karina Danique on backing vocals, and it feels more vintage NoFX than almost anything that we've had on the albums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a couple of songs on there. I think like Fuck Day 6 feels really vintagey NoFX. That feels like it could have lived on a previous album.
Yeah, there's absolutely.
Songs like that but some of it feels like it's specifically for this album, and I don't know if that's what's missing the mark for me. But well, let's move on to the final one, The Last Drag.
Yeah, this is great.
Now, obviously, this is connected musically and possibly tonally to The Big Drag.
Yes, very much so.
The first time I listened to it, I don't know if I was taken with it particularly, because one of my first notes is, bunch of snakes around here, just me and the kids from now on.
It is a bit, she's turned the weans against us.
A little bit, yeah. I feel like pure shite. There's a bit of, I mean, and understandably so, if the stories from this sort of era are true, then, you know, massive if true. This, I think I prefer to The Biggest Drag.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think it's more interesting musically. It goes to different places.
Yeah.
Whereas The Big Drag sort of really plods along at the same pace throughout for me. But whereas this mixes it up a little bit.
But I think that you have to, like, I think this exists because of the previous context of The Big Drag.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, you need parts one and two. Absolutely agree with you on that. Yeah, no, definitely. It's about how he went to detox, even though he claims not to have been addicted. Now, I don't know whether he's saying, you know, the context of that, but then it turns out that the detox is actually from a person, and I believe it's Soma, judging by all of the context. I could be wrong again, so don't judge me. You can judge me if you like, I suppose. So it's the bit where it's also got vibes of that Fair Leather Friends from the Koki album.
Yes.
And that sort of, you know, people hated the fact that they were together, or some people did, and, you know, and all that kind of thing. There's a line in it saying, sex is not the same as an intimate beating.
Yes.
So it seems like the agreement was that he can be beaten by any dom that he hires, but actual sex was off the table from others. It wasn't a polyamorous thing, even though I believe when they got together, Soma had a sort of a slave, a sub-dom relationship already, which was incorporated into their existence. But I don't know how that happened. It's weird. It's sort of, it makes you very gossipy when there are songs like this, because you sort of go, well, it isn't really any of my business, but it is being presented in this song. And now I'm scratching my head going, well, what does that mean? And,
yes.
And it sort of, it does spur a natural curiosity to go, well, that seems like a less than usual situation. I wonder what that's all about. You know, it's sort of with breakup songs and stuff, you know, I'm sure we've got some fans of She Broke My Heart kind of songs out there. We all have been. It's just how life goes when you like rock music and were born at a certain time. But you never really venture further into those, because half the time when it's like a breakup song, I don't know. I've always thought, well, it might be about one person, but it could be about several people that are just putting them together to make a general purpose breakup song, almost for the benefit of people listening rather than you getting something out. But all of this shit is so specific.
Yeah, absolutely.
You find yourself becoming very curious about it in a parasocial way that I'm not comfortable with, because I know just how parasocial I can get with this shit. I'm literally wearing a t-shirt with YouTubers on it.
You could,
from a channel I enjoy. So, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult for me to not go overboard. This is like me being at a buffet. Like, the amount of restraint I'm exercising is insane.
You could probably do like an album of songs that Mike's released, which are, you know, like his songs where he's overshared.
Yes. I think his innate honesty. You know that thing where he says, I can't lie? Like, I just can't do it. And I do believe that, because I believe there is some neurodivergence occurring within Mike Burkett, combined with various traumas and various other things that will produce. It's like, I'm saying, I don't lie. That's fine.
I think that he can lie. I think he generally avoids it.
Yeah. No, I know what he means when he says I can't lie.
Yeah.
Like, I can't lie about important things. It's...
I think that he he finds authenticity very important. When authenticity is super important to your personality type, you are reluctant to lie.
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, I imagine that there are situations where he would lie knowing that that was a better thing to do as a kindness for an individual and all that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. we take all of this with a grain of salt. Also, saying I never lie is the sort of thing a liar would say, so, which is a really difficult setup, you know. So, but I think this sort of very stark honesty, this bluntness, it's naive to think that being that blunt will not raise questions in response to that bluntness.
Yeah, sure.
If someone is very, and I'm not saying that, you know, anyone has to say any more than they want to, but it shouldn't be surprising if you say something as blunt as, say, in this song, which I do really like. I think if someone says, oh, right, well, you said this, so what, well, does that mean this? And someone goes, that's none of your business. It's sort of, you can say, well, actually, I didn't say that bit because I don't think that's anyone's business, but I've said this bit because I understand and accept that.
Yeah.
But to be surprised or shocked that someone might ask a question, we are curious creatures. We want mm-hmm. to know. We want mm-hmm. to find patterns. We want to find reasons for things. Not that he is being, but, you know, it seems to be like the detox is like, it was hard to give you up. There's also a spoken word bit about, you know, the last drag being like the last drag on a cigarette before you quit smoking and all this kind of thing. And I like this one more than the big drag because, like I said, it's got a sort of mini decline feel in that it's got different yes. movements. It's got different musical flavors. It's got different styles going or different tempos. And it speeds up as it goes mm-hmm. towards the end as well, like as it's actually going, which I really, really like. There's a little spoken word section that's sort of a little earnest, but it doesn't last very long because it goes back into the singing because otherwise it's got that sort of Generation Z
yeah.
poem vibe to it, which isn't my thing really. What are your feelings on this song?
I kind of like concur with everything you've said. I think you're totally right when you said like it's got a little bit of the decline about it. Mm. I think that, I mean, this must be one of their longest songs, right? Because this is 6:11, but it's straight through. It's not like a bonus track.
This is 6 minutes. It's longer than the big drag, which is just under 6 minutes.
Right, sure.
It's about 20 seconds longer. So between them, the big drag and the last drag are 12 minutes.
The final section to the last drag is great. Like, I'd love to see this played live. And there's a little bit of me that kind of, you know, like, I think this would be a good... Because, I mean, I wonder, you know, obviously NoFX are doing their last tour at the moment. I wonder if there's been discussion about what will be the final track they play.
It's got to be the decline, hasn't it?
I suppose it would be the decline. But there's something that's quite... that fits with this. I don't know, like, this song has all of the bits what NoFX does, you know?
It does, but with the decline... they'd have like 20 of their mates playing guitar.
Yeah, true.
All of the horn players that they've ever met all playing it. It would be, you know, it.
And they're still going to, I still think that they will reform for the occasional charity performance or whatever.
Potentially, but I.
Like at the Punk Rock Museum.
If they would, I wouldn't consider their promise broken if they played like once at the Punk Rock Museum or anything like that. If it was just like no one knew it was happening and we just did it secretly. Like, that's how...
They've already broke the promise, haven't they, by adding more than 40 dates to
No, because they said when their last... They said when their last shows were going to be and they've mm-hmm. not booked any shows for after that.
Oh,
they've
okay.
They've just been filling them in, you know, as and when they could. So, I mean, the thing is that because NoFX are that kind of a band and Fat Mike is that kind of a person... Anything they do will be used as an example of why Fat Mike is a fat sellout millionaire piece of shit cunt. Fair. By people who are apparently fans of the band. and so it's like, what do you want? Like, can't believe they're breaking up. What a bunch of pussies. Can't believe they're not breaking up. What a bunch of pussies. It's like, what is wrong with you? Fucking hell. So, I think musically this is more interesting than the big drag. I think I've already said that. But yeah, it's more memorable as well. I think there's actually more of a hook.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a good version of the Big Drag.
I like the Big Drag, so the I wouldn't
drag,
go that
the
far.
The Big Drag's but... fine, but I think this is what the Big Drag could have been with a little more thought, and then they wouldn't have needed the Big Drag. But I understand the parts A and B. I understand that. And I think it's notable that they're bookending the albums.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a mistake.
No.
I think that was very deliberate.
They mention it in the notes in the press release they sent. Certainly think it's very clever.
Yeah, I don't think it's very clever, but I think it makes sense.
It says the last song on Half Album is called The Last Drag, a counterpart to single albums Open and The Big Drag. It took Mike 5 years to finish, and not only brings the whole 25 double album full circle, but also reveals the profound depth of his songwriting.
I mean, I'd be massively uncomfortable with someone releasing that on behalf of me.
Their press release does feel like it's been written by ChatGPT. Like, I don't think it's necessarily awful, but it is very long. And it does have that lack of... it's not very humble for an album that's got the humblest man in the world on it.
Well, the humblest man in the world didn't write it.
Very much so, yeah.
Hey, look, you can try our record if you like. It's not very long. Humblest man in the world. You know, that would be... You know, that would be the humblest man in the world, I guess. Yeah. So it feels like this sort of... It feels like a really long, drawn-out experiment, this album period.
It doesn't have to be as well, because as we mentioned, you know, like, if you were to put these three releases into one single release, like, I've sat down and worked out what would be included in my release... And I'm looking at the track listing now, and this is a great album. Like, this is, you know, if NOFX had only released one album in the last few years, and it was this track listing, I would consider it to be a bit of a triumph, and certainly a suitable successor to First Stitch Effort.
Mm.
Not as good, but
no.
Decent.
I don't like my track listing as much as First Stitch Effort, but I don't think either of us do. So that's not what we're here to do. Also, I haven't sequenced mine.
I sequenced mine loosely.
Yeah, I definitely haven't. I've literally gone down single, gone right, that one, and then doubled that one.
Sure.
So so don't look to me for the sequencing, because I didn't want to take up too much time. Do we have anything more to say on Half Album before we go to Ultimate Album, which is what I'm calling? I'm calling this album. That's what our track listings are going to be for.
Is this 2.5 albums? Is this album 2.5?
I think just call it album.
album. Cool.
Album. And also, if you would like to send us your album track lists.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Then please do punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Because this is kind of a fun game. We didn't see many people do their like 40 songs thing, but that's a lot. This, you're really narrowing it down. And I'm sure some people are like, two songs, that's it, fuck this.
Yeah.
And then maybe even, if you're interested, put this together as an album in whatever order you think's best and listen to it and see whether it works better.
Yeah, like make it on Spotify or whatever. It could work.
Yeah, absolutely. Do a little YouTube playlist or something like that. You can get that sorted. So, well, tell you what, you go first. What's your album? Mark off and see how many we agree on.
Do you want it all of them? Like, and
let's do all of yours at once.
Okay, great. We're starting with the Big Drag.
Okay.
We're starting with the Big Drag. We're going into Doors and Fours. Okay.
Okay.
Straight into Doors and Fours. My favorite track off of the album era, potentially. Mm-hmm. Then, a little bit of a change. Fish in a Gun Barrel is underrated. I think it might be, you know, like from the album era. You don't really get like the Scar tracks, and we haven't in a long time. I don't think there's any Scar on First Stitch Effort.
I don't think there's any on Self Entitled.
Exactly, right.
I think it might be Coaster was the last time we heard any Scar-y stuff.
Yeah, like Best God in Show and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Fish in a Gun Barrel is great.
Oh, we got a little bit on the Frank Turner split.
Of course.
We got a little bit, but of NoFX original, we're Coaster, I think. Yeah.
So third track, Fish in a Gun Barrel. Yep. Then, and I wasn't entirely sure on where this track should go, but it needs to be in there. Birmingham.
Right.
I think Birmingham is you know, it's one of their sadder songs. I think Frank Turner said it was one of his favourites.
It had his favourite lyric that at the time we spoke to him, certainly, yes.
Yes. Then, you know, back to sort of like a standard NoFX with Derby Crashing Your Party.
Uh-huh.
And then it moves into a slightly different section where I would have My Bro Can Survive Cancer, followed by Fake a Wish, in sort of like a, you know, like when The Kwos and Dying Decay just run straight into each other.
Dying Degree, yeah.
Dying Degree, of course. Yeah, yeah. Those two there, I think, would work really well.
So you'd have like the sort of the final chord of Can Survive Cancer going into with like hanging and then the piano starting under it. Yeah. I like you giving arrangements for this as well. This
is, right?
This is, absolutely.
Serious notes.
Yeah, it's great.
Then I'm a Rat. I think it's a solid single. I'm a Rat into Humblest Man in the World, which I think is another banger. And then ending on final track, The Last Drag. Although I would like to say, side note, I would like to fit Linoleum in here somewhere, but I couldn't work out where it should go.
So how many tracks was that you just done as 12?
I think it's 11. So okay. I think it's 12 with Linoleum.
You can put Linoleum in there, absolutely. Wherever that would go.
Oh no, it's 10 tracks. With Linoleum, it's 11. Yeah, probably somewhere around Derby Crashing Your Party.
Okay then. Well, I have got 7 of those.
Okay, cool.
So, similar. I think our firsts and lasts are probably the same. The big drag and last drag.
Of course.
Otherwise, the whole experiment doesn't really work.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're not telling you, if you're going to do one of these, you don't have to include either of these songs on it.
Oh,
if
no.
You don't want
you do
to.
What you
it's,
want.
It's absolutely your 12. How long is your album, by the way? Did you work,
under 40 minutes?
Really, mine's 45.
Really,
but then that is interesting. I've got 12 songs though, so you're on 11. So you know,
of course,
that'll be where. And I'm also estimating one of them, but we'll get to that. So this is not the final order. This is just the order I wrote them down in. I've not sequenced it. So we start with Big Drag.
Yeah.
Fish in a Gun Barrel.
Nice.
Birmingham.
Yes.
Grieve Soto.
Fair.
Doors and Fours.
Mm-hmm.
Derby Crashing Your Party.
Okay.
Don't Count on Me.
Yeah.
Fuck Day 6.
Mm-hmm.
Alko Pollock.
Mm.
Your Last Resort. Humblest Man. And Last Drag.
Yeah. But when you look at your track listing, don't you think like, oh, actually, that looks like a good NoFX album? Because when I look at the track listings of Single and Double, I'm like, oh, that looks a bit boring.
Yeah.
But when I look at my track listing, I'm like, oh, that looks like a good NoFX album.
Yeah, it's weird. And it also feels like the closest album it is like Heavy Petting Zoo, which is really odd.
Yeah, Heavy Petting Zoo and a little bit of First Itch Effort.
Yeah, like a little sniff of Wolves. It's sort of, it feels really, really strange looking at it. It's such a weird recipe.
I like it because I think there's a real unique and new NoFX sound somewhere in these three albums. I just don't think it needs to be three albums.
Yeah, I think, because I think on this one, because I really like Don't Count on Me, I think the Mel Yell just makes it. And I like the fact that Heffy gets to sing on it. I'd actually throw them to, I would, this is where the arranging would happen. I wouldn't leave that big gap. I'd just let it fade out the punk bit and then start with the keyboards and then have Heffy singing the reggae bit. And then it wouldn't go in, it wouldn't blend into the next song. So instead of that being like 4:19, I'd make it like 3 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
It would be about maybe 2 or 3 minutes, 2.5, 3 minutes. So mine's 45 minutes long for 12 songs. Given that two of those songs take up 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think that's... But the thing is, I mean, you've got like Fish in a Gun Barrel's 3.5, Birmingham's 3.5, Grieve, Soto's like 4. Doors and Fours is nearly 5.
Yeah.
Your Last Resort is 4. You know, so... Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting experiment to do. I quite... and I'm glad because... talking about just five songs on an episode is a bit of a short change for anyone listening.
I think it's just really easy for us to all fall into, oh, this album era of NoFX is some of their worst stuff. I don't believe that at all. I think it's some of their least refined stuff, and I don't think they needed to release all of it.
It's weird because you talk about it being least refined. It's technically the most refined.
Yeah, how interesting.
Which is worse. Yeah, yeah.
It confirms that thing that Mike has suspected, that, yeah, you know, the more time they spend on NoFX, the less good NoFX sound.
Well, I mean, you know, 20 minutes per song and they make Slat Fats.
Yep.
You know, the Fuck the Kids and Surfer EPs show just how exciting they are when they're just about getting away with it instead of super practiced, super meticulous, and all the rest of it. So, but I mean, you know, they don't want to be making the same stuff over and over again. The fans want them to, but they don't want to be making the same stuff over and over again. You know, as our live show showed, people, you know, got upset about Wolves in Wolves Clothing because it didn't sound like the Fat sound. Their production changed and all the rest of it. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, it took us long enough to get here. What, like 3 years or something to get all of the album stuff? 2 to 3 years of all of that? And there is a good album in there. There's a couple of good albums in there, technically. They're predominantly the same songs, but there's some really great work by Mike, and there's some of his least impressive work as well.
So a standard NoFX album, then?
No, not really, because it feels bad to say, because I don't want to... I mean, apart from that Stephen Hawking song, because come on, mate, seriously. That's just appalling. But I realize what annoys me even more is that musically it sounds a bit like Oxymoronic, which annoys me even more. So it's like, oh, so you're not even like retreading one of the good ones for this piece of shit. So anyway, but yeah, it's really weird because you're right, because with Don't Count on Me and Fish in a Gun Barrel, you've got more reggae ska style stuff in there than we've had in a decade. You've got that new sound, you know, the Doors and Fours, Big Drag, Last Resorty kind of things, and and then still stuff like Alcopolic, which is sounds super Fat sound.
Yeah, it does.
Not in the guitar production stuff, but I think these are like weirdly the most anonymous NoFX albums, in spite of them being so autobiographical. You can't really hear NoFX on there. And Yeah, exactly. But that's because in some cases you're not even hearing NoFX on the album.
Yeah, I agree.
And that makes me feel sad in a way that I shouldn't care about, but I've told you about this parasocial bullshit that I fall for all the time. It feels like a band should be playing on their own albums. Now, that isn't true of so much of like the 1960s, some of the 70s, and all of this stuff. You know, I just saw an interview with Josh Fries, now of Foo Fighters, and he was talking about how all of the session drumming that he's done, where like the producers said, are you on your way? He's like, yeah, I'll be here like 5 minutes. Like, okay, can you wait in the Starbucks around the corner, because the drummer's just showed up and we don't want him to know, and he's just seen people loading in your drums with like Josh Fries written on all the cases, and he's like, oh, is Josh Fries here? Like, yeah, he's in the other studio doing some session work, mate.
So they're just fucking out.
He's just, the drummer's just turned up gone, oh, hey guys, I was just in the neighborhood, I thought I'd pop in. And they're like, oh, today was the day we were having all of your drums replaced by
fuck.
Yeah
That's so funny.
Yeah, and he's like, he said the amount of records I'm on credited with additional percussion, which just means all of the drums.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it just happens all the time. And so you feel bad because you're like, well, that could never possibly happen to the band that I like. And it's like, well, why? You know, I mean, they've credited guitarists with doing the ska stuff because they're like, you know, they'd get Sasha from the Mad Caddies, or they'd get a member of the Boss Tones or someone like that to do ska guitar on their album because Hefe and Melvin don't play ska guitar well enough to record it. Yeah. I'll play it live, it's fine, but for the album, you need something about, which is why they've got your man from Goldfinger on, on tour with them and stuff. And, you know, essentially that is a good thing, isn't it? One, someone else is getting a job in music. You know, it's the same way some people go, oh, did you know this comedian uses writers? I go, good, two people are getting paid from comedy instead of one. You know, I'm for that. I don't have a problem with people using writers. If the writers are getting paid, then great. If the comedian's doing a good job of doing those jokes, then fine. I don't need them to be, you know, I know I've worked with, they've not written, I've worked with a writer before. I've worked with John Gordillo. I hired him to help me with some stuff a while ago when I was getting back in after a bit of time off, just to get back in the mold. And, you know, it was basically just consultancy, basically. Mm-hmm. I was just like, look, this is what I've come up with. What sort of shape should it be? You know, is there anything to this? And we just talked about it for a couple of hours. I paid him his fee, and then I was like, oh, okay, I feel a bit better about all of this now and stuff like that. That is fine. Mm-hmm. And this is all that really is. I suppose it's just when it's sort of listed the way it's listed, you sort of feel like you're being misled some way. I don't know. I don't know if you have any feelings on that kind of a thing.
Not a great deal. I do feel like with these final albums, like as I've said, I can hear Mike, but I can't always hear the rest of the band. Mm. I suspect that the particularly Half album is one of those albums when, you know, they're trying to make Smelly play some drum machine patterns that they've programmed in a computer.
Yeah. But do not come naturally to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, he does a fantastic job, but mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like he's just being left to do whatever, which is the vibe I've always got on their previous releases.
I think Mike has always been like dictatorial.
Yeah.
In the sort of, oh, I want it to go this way, then I want it to go like maybe half time. Well, the thing is like if you listen to I'm Telling Tim on, I think it's Surfer, mm-hmm. or Fuck the Kid, whichever one it was on before So Long, it doesn't slow down to that half speed. It just goes fat beat all the way through. And then on the album, it goes to that just before the final little bit, it goes to that half bit. So there are little arrangement changes, and I don't know if that was something that was suggested by Mike or by Smelly or whoever. But, you know, so these things do happen. I don't know how much input these people have in it. And it's like, you know, they never practiced. You know, they learned the songs and then they just turned up. You know, they've practiced for this last tour more than they have in the rest of their career.
I get the feeling that, and I might be completely wrong on this, but I think that it's obviously become a lot easier to home record. Mm. So the whole demo process is a lot easier now than it used to be. Yeah. I mean, like we spoke previously, like when we were talking about like our episode on Dookie, that there's like some versions out there, like some demo versions of Basket Case with just like hand claps and things in the background and stuff that. And that
really
is how
all percussion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how people used to demo tracks. They used to use like a little 8-track and they'd create it in their own bedroom. But like now that technology has moved on so much. So now Mike is doing the exact same, but with a programmable drum machine.
Yeah.
And I think that he's making rhythms that don't naturally sit right with his drummer. I think mm-hmm. that he's playing guitar lines that aren't naturally what the musicians in his band would naturally gravitate towards to make something that's a little bit more, uniquely Mike. And
yeah.
I think that affects NoFX's overall output.
And I think that the knowledge that these songs, of these 25 songs, hardly any of them, if any of them, are ever going to get performed live.
Yeah.
And so therefore it doesn't really matter. It's just capturing them once and then it's done. You know, with... You know, The Decline was never supposed to be done live.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went, well, why not? But then that was also 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So they were younger then. They could learn a new song like that. And it's become a staple. Having an 18-minute song is something that could likely happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's incredible. And it's that thing, I worry that these sort of things are going to like muddy a legacy.
Mm.
Because if you take the long view of it, if you take a view of those 40 years and the 35 years they've been releasing music, you're like, there's still so much incredible stuff.
Yes.
That so exceeds all of this stuff. And even this, and this stuff here, these 25 tracks that we've got are like, feel like they're all like below average, but the average is so high. That's
sure.
One of the things. So it's difficult to sort of contextualize that. And then also when you just do a thing like whittle it down to 12, you go, oh yeah, no, actually, yeah, no, that'd be pretty good. Bit long,
yeah,
but, you know, pretty good.
Yeah.
You've done a better job of keeping the time to a more sensible limit. But even 45 minutes is not so bad.
It's not horrendous at all.
So that's still a single EP, a single LP.
Yeah.
22 minutes each side. You can shave off a little bit here and there. Yeah, that'll be fine. So there we are. That was half album, and indeed the ultimate choices of album.
Let us know what you think about the release. Send in your suggestions for album. We'd love to hear what the listeners think.
We absolutely would. And punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what your album is all about. Cool. Well, we'll see you in the outro.
Goodbye.
Well, there we go. I think we used half album as an excuse to really explore our feelings about the entire album era, didn't we?
Yeah, half album, but full episode.
That's what we should call this. Yeah, interesting. I thought, actually, do you know what? Yeah, because I realized it wouldn't take too long to whittle down the album into the ones I'd want to listen to again. I thought, oh, is that going to take a lot of time? And no, some of them are just straight line through. Nah. So
it's a long-standing theory I've had. I've had it since we started looking at single album. I think that album era is really interesting. I just think that there's a bit of fat in it.
Ironic.
Mm.
Actually, if anything, there's too much fat in it, as in fat Mike. I don't know. It's I don't know whether he's become more dictatorial about this, like I said,
than previous ones,
but it feels like the personalities of NOFX don't really shine through in this.
Yeah.
In this era. And it feels like since Cokey the Clown and since Home Street Home, Mike has sort of been less focused on NOFX and is sort of using them as a way of letting out precisely what he wants to do rather than thinking of it as NOFX. But I don't know. This is all wild speculation and I could well be talking out my hole.
And it's why, you know, like I'm not too sad about them calling it a day because I think that bands should call it a day before it becomes a chore. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I do think that's what they're doing, and I commend them for it.
The thing is that I think that the only person for whom performing live had become a chore is Mike.
Yeah.
And the others are like, no, we love this.
Yeah.
This is great. But Mike doesn't want to do it anymore. And, you know, none of them are spring chickens anymore. So, you know, there was only realistically a certain amount of time they could do it before that was going to become more and more difficult. But people assume a lot of things about bands. Like a lot of them will assume that they're all millionaires. I don't think they are. I don't think the rest of the band are necessarily because they don't have any writing credits. You know, they get paid when they play.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any publishing that goes to them. You know, sometimes I know people who've been in bands and there's been like two songwriters. And when it's come to like the publishing deals, they've been like, okay, well, you two write the songs, but we would recommend that instead of going 50-50, you are 40-40 and give 10% to the other two members of the band, because otherwise they'll simply get nothing for record sales or anything like that, you know, or if it gets used in an advert or you know, whatever. So I don't know what sort of arrangement that is. Again, it's none of our business really, but there's sort of people assuming that all of these people are multimillionaires. Like every band that you've ever heard of must be a multimillionaire because that's how bands are. It doesn't really, I find that difficult to believe. I'm very skeptical of that kind of thinking.
But if you own a record label you're probably all right.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm sure he's fine. I'm not saying that he's not. But and any
the rest of,
that.
Of them less so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Hefe does acting and stuff. Smelly's got a surfboard company. Melvin's going to be a life coach, which which I think is great. I mean, there will be stuff for them to do because they were all in NoFX. I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You got anything coming up? It's exciting.
What have I got coming up that's exciting? I don't know, because it's just been my birthday. I just have like birthday brain, you know, nothing matters but my birthday. I'm going to go and see a movie on the
very
weekend.
Very different attitudes to our birthdays.
So yeah, you know, like just chilling out, going and seeing some films and, you know, just enjoying birthday life.
That's cool. Oh, well, we're going to be involved. Well, we're going to be the audience of a special thing in May.
We are. I don't know if we were allowed to talk about this.
I'm pretty sure we are.
Oh, okay. Let's tell them.
About Frank Turner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank Turner is going for a world record.
And we will be there to witness the world record.
We'll be there to witness a portion of it. So what happens is Frank Turner on the 4th of May is, between the 4th and the 5th of May, is setting out to play the highest number of individual venues in a single day.
Yep.
And he's doing it all in like independent music venues.
Yes.
From Liverpool down to somewhere in the south. I can't remember where, but he's doing 20-minute sets. And he's doing Boom in Leeds, which is a great venue. And so we're going to be there. He's due to be on stage at about 4. The venue opens at 2. People are getting there, hanging out. There's going to be a support act. Basically, he's being rushed into a place, doing a song, and then rushing out. Apparently, Timo the barber, who listens up in Liverpool, has said on Insta, I don't know if it was a joke or not, said we'll be giving Frank a quick trim before 12:30. He does a show in Liverpool and then he legs it out there, probably going to, I think maybe like Preston, Manchester. He's doing a lot of places. He's going from here to Huddersfield and then Sheffield.
Yeah. And then Sheffield. Yeah.
And then, I think he's doing Brixton might be like, Brixton or Camden. I think he's doing it like 4 in the morning and 6 in the morning.
Wow.
And then finishing the last show, he starts at 12:00.
Amazing.
The following day. So he starts at 12:30 and then the following, 12:30, midday. And then the following midday, he'll start and then finish just before 12:30. And if he does that, he'll have broken the world record for the largest number of music venues played in a single 24-hour period. And will have raised money. It's for like the indie venues, grassroots venues. He did some stuff during lockdown. He did a few like live streams to raise money for those kind of places. And he's doing it again. So, super exciting. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So
can't wait.
I think so. Have a look and see. You have to point out he's literally doing 20 minutes and then he's off. He's like probably like 4 or 5 songs and then he's going. And we're seeing, he's like, he'll have started at 12:30 and then we'll be seeing it at about 4. So he should still be fine by then.
Yeah, hopefully.
But presumably outside every venue, there'll just be someone there with their motor turning, with their like engine just turning over. just waiting there, just waiting for the songs and stuff. So it's exciting. What a clever thing to do. So yeah, I'm sure his Instagram that day will be super interesting, you know, Insta stories and reels and stuff about that. So that's a cool thing to do. Outside of that, not really a huge amount coming up, but we'll keep you informed as to when it is. So half album. We've got one more major NoFX release.
Yeah.
And then that's it, I think.
Absolutely.
It's not come out yet, so there's life in the old dog for now, but we'll see. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with all the things we suggested. Thanks a lot, Red.
Thank you, Eddie.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.